Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This Word in Your Ear is brought to you thanks to NordVPN. VPN, Mark, what does it stand
for? Virtual Private Network.
Very good. And that's a way to keep your data safe on the internet whenever you're logging in, either at home or abroad. It protects your identity and encrypts your data so that nobody can steal your identity. And at the same time, it enables you to sidestep the region restrictions that control what programs are shown in which regions, because you're accessing the internet via servers in more than 50 different countries. So you can get access to all kinds of things that you might not be able to get access to.
And get different programs, don't you?
Yeah, I've been recently watching the old, strangely enough, Peter Sellers films on Swedish Netflix, which has been wonderful.
From which
I understand how come I'm All Right, Jack no longer pops up on British TV. Just go and watch it, Mark. We'll talk about it later.
There's going to be some kind of racist element or something. Yeah, okay.
Certainly.
They should have the wrong arm of the law. Peter Sellers is Pearly Gates. Nervous.
It's on there. It's on there. All those things are on there. Via American Amazon, I've seen the French drama A French Village. Have you ever seen this?
No.
Which reminds me that I think the only countries who ought to be allowed to make programs about wartime occupation are countries who were occupied in wartime. You know, that's why A French Village is so good. I just watched a documentary about antiquarian booksellers in New York, from which it was very clear that the internet has killed rarity at a stroke and has therefore killed the rare books business. It probably done the same thing
killed
with the rare records.
Done the same thing to records, probably.
Yeah, it must have done the same things to
records.
Well,
meaning that the ones that there are some and they're all available again.
Find them. You know, it used to be, you had to go out and hunt these things down and therefore you could charge a lot of money from them. Nowadays, you don't have to hunt them down in the same way. And just now, I've been watching the 1969 film Battle of Britain, starring Michael Caine and Laurence Olivier, from which I want to ask you a question, Mark. How much machine gun time fire did a Spitfire have during combat in World War II? How long could they fire their guns for in World War II?
People were asking that when Dunkirk came out. And it's far less than you think. It's something absolutely ludicrous, like 2 minutes or something, isn't it?
Less than that. It's 15 seconds. 15 seconds per sortie is all they had. Well, it's absurd if you think about the drama that's been built up around, you know, aerial battles in movies, right through to
firing at each other. Yeah. So you fire once, you might as well go home.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. That's
incredible. So anyway, that's some of the stuff I've found. You know, I've been delighted with some of the riches I've stumbled upon. So anyway, you can take advantage of a deal where you can try NordVPN by going to nordvpn.com/yourear, that's us, or just use the code YOURear to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan. And also one additional month for free and a bonus gift. Hooray.
Good.
So it's risk-free because there's a 30-day money-back guarantee. Full details are below in the show notes.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
Mark, I saw something very disturbing on Finsbury Park tube station platform the other day as I was passing through. It was a huge, great poster. Huge, great poster advertising a forthcoming, not a gig, but a series of gigs, two gigs taking place, I think, in June, I think it is. And it said these gigs were taking place at somewhere called BST Hyde Park.
BST Hyde Park, I've seen this.
BST Hyde Park. I thought, is that the same Hyde Park as we know as Hyde Park? You know what I mean? Clearly it is. But the group appearing at BST Hyde Park in June are you ready, Mark? You may not be familiar with this group. They are Stones.
I've seen this poster, and I have various issues. Stones, not even the Stones, just
absolutely
Stones, which is incredible. Because, I mean, there are many issues here. One of which, obviously, is the great joy of going on stage to introduce and say, "Ladies and gentlemen, the greatest rock and roll band in the world, the Rolling Stones." You wouldn't say Stones, would you?
I'm going to stop you a second, Mark. People are paying huge sums of money to go and see Stones, yeah? Hundreds of pounds, probably, in many cases. I would suggest that if they know that they're not going to be introduced as, ladies and gentlemen, the Rolling Stones, 50 quid's gone already in terms of value, hasn't it? Because
that's the excitement.
Ceremony is all.
Yeah, you've heard it a million times.
Absolutely bloody everything.
Yeah. I know. But actually, it's worse. If you look at I had a look at some of the posters for the European tour, and actually the big word on the posters is not even Stones. It's 60. It says 60, then it says Stones UK 2022.
Oh, right.
Or Stones Europe 2022. So actually, those are even worse because you don't even get Stones. You get 60, which is an extraordinary thing to be celebrating really in itself. And then you get Stones UK. So in a sense, that's not so bad, the one you saw, Dave. There are worse ones.
But I'm sorry, it's wrong. Yeah, you know, wrong. They are the Rolling Stones. The Stones, which is what they're kind of familiarly known as and have been known as since 1964, it's still not something you want to see written down. It's a spoken thing, yeah. The Stones is. But, you know, when you buy a ticket or when it's a beginning of a show, you want the full billing, don't you? You want, ladies and gentlemen, Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. You don't want anything less. You know what I mean?
Because the only other times this has ever happened, people like Jefferson Airplane became Jefferson Starship, and then they became Starship. But that was a change of lineup, wasn't it?
Yeah, it would be.
The only thing is with this, is there any element at all that Stones is a different concept from the Rolling Stones in the absence of Charlie? I don't think so, because if you Google their tour dates, they are there as the Rolling Stones. So, that's how they're advertised, apart from on those posters.
So, do you know why I think this has happened? We both worked with graphic designers over the years. What do graphic designers always want? Fewer words.
And have more impact.
So they can have them bigger.
Or put them on their side.
And then the Rolling Stones, absolutely, on their side, that nobody can read them. And so Rolling Stones is a difficult one because the word rolling takes up more space than the word Stones. So get rid of the word rolling. While I'm saying it simply won't do, and we're not going to take it.
The Word Podcast. Prime cuts of popular culture served fresh each week.
So we've become, very sadly, used to the idea of the constant news of magazines stopping publishing print versions. But it's funny, I was very, very touched when I heard about Time Out this week, because Time Out was a hugely significant magazine for me, as I'm sure it was for you. My God, I came to London...
For anybody who lived in London, that was the point. It was massively significant for a long period of time. Carry on, go on.
Well, no, I came to London in whatever it was, late 76 to early 77. And my entire life revolved around getting a copy of Time Out. And I'd go through it with a little highlighter. And we'd decide, me and my girlfriend, later wife, would decide what film we were going to see. We'd decide what restaurant we were going to go to. If we ever, in the rare event, went to a theatre, we'd find out about that from Time Out. We'd read the reviews. We'd use all that kind of guidance. And we'd all the gigs. And so every gig, you went through it. And I was starting writing for The Enemy and Record Mirror and stuff like that. I would go through it and highlight everything that I had to see. Every single bit of information. It wasn't the same with you. If you wanted to rent a flat, that's where you
went. The fact that it seemed that you needed the phone number of everywhere in order to be able to do anything. So if you wanted to know what time, 10 Rillington Place was screening at the Southgate ABC, you'd have to have the phone number of the Southgate ABC. And the only place you'd get that was Time Out.
Yeah.
So it was a telephone book as much as anything else. It was phone numbers and address details of all the places that you might want to go or to know about.
Yeah.
And I mean, it sounds to be overestimating it, but it was the internet.
Completely the internet.
In the 70s, it was the internet. All the things that you now go to the internet for, they expect the internet to provide. Time Out provided it. And the other thing that I think is often lost sight of is that all that kind of all those sort of subcultures that started off as, oh my goodness, they've got a gay section.
They were way ahead.
It really seemed like quite something at the time that read about that. And also things like, I was thinking about this morning, when the campaign for real ale first launched in 1971, it would suddenly get that move towards, beer should be made better, food should be made better, fresher, all that kind of stuff. All those campaigns, you first read about them, it seems to me, in Time Out. And they led to sections in Time Out that became regulars. Absolutely.
And the other thing that struck me was that a lot of those musical movements, pub rock, you can't imagine how they would ever have taken off if it wasn't for the fact that there was one magazine that told you where all these pubs were and sent it on a focus on all these bands that were playing there, And you could say the same about punk rock, that the Pegasus and Stoke Newington was suddenly on the radar, the Greyhound in the Fulham Road, the clubs in particular, the whole new romantic club scene, Heaven, and the Beach and Cabaret Futura.
And the Jazz Revival.
Jazz Revival, they were made by Time Out.
Folk revivals, all those things. They were always writing about scenes that were going on in London that weren't necessarily going to be huge, great commercial money spinners, but were just of interest to people.
And it was such an interesting magazine in terms of its covers too, because it had that brilliant thing which you now only get on free magazines like the Sunday Times or any of the kind of broadsheet magazines where you can do what you want on the cover, because that's not what's selling the product, And Time Out, its main commercial engine obviously was all the listings, and so that's why people bought it. In fact, you didn't care what was on the cover. Didn't matter at all what was on the cover. Didn't sway you, because you just needed to know what was on the flicks or whatever. And they did these really extraordinary, experimental, interesting, outrageous graphic design covers. I can still remember loads of them, because they had the freedom and the confidence to be able to do that. And I was going through the roof this morning. I found a few old ones.
Going through the roof.
Going through the attic. There we are. That's when Richard Williams was the editor, 1978. So this is Bob Dylan's return to Britain, having only played what would have been the Isle of Wight in 1969. But otherwise, he hadn't played in Britain since, 66, I think,
Yeah.
And, so funny, the intro to this piece about Dylan's, how many Dylan references they can get in. The headline is "The Man in the Bob Dylan Hat," obviously a Dylan reference and stuff. So if you don't underestimate Bob Dylan, he might not underestimate you. On the eve of the very first British performance in a very long time, his friend and biographer, Robert Shelton, walks into the room with a pencil in his hand.
Oh, that's a good line.
Rammed it in. It's great. It's a great one. That's an original oil painting that they've commissioned. Rather a good one, I think, actually. Commissioned for that cover.
Was Piers Marchbank the art director?
Piers Marchbank was the art director.
I think he would be.
The cover was painted by Donna Muir. Isn't that great? I love that.
Yeah, really, but the biggest selling Time Out covers, although I never worked for it, but I just talked to editors and talked to the late Tony Elliott about it, who was the publisher. The biggest covers were always the kind of city breaks and, you know, kids London and cheap weekends
cheap
in Amsterdam.
That's the kind of one thing. Absolutely.
It was very kind of consumer facing, wasn't it?
That was
the stuff really worked. But it's amazing that I was just looking at something that I wrote about it when it ceased, when it went free.
Okay.
Because don't forget, it used to be quite an expensive thing to buy, didn't it?
Yeah, it was.
And then it went free. Well, it's 10 years since it went free, which I was amazed at. You know, that's 10 years of giving away copies.
And then they distributed 300,000. Amazing.
Yeah. But before giving up the ghost is what it seems to be.
Yeah.
But I suppose it's fair to say it had its run.
It had its run, and it was onto things very early. The New British Artist movement, they were really behind. Yeah. I remember that Damien Hirst and Tracy Emin and Spice Girls, I can remember they got behind really early on. Andy Warhol, David Bowie, Monty Python. With Monty Python, they gave various members of the Monty Python team the chance to guest edit the magazine, and they were really ahead of the game. It's a fantastic magazine.
Yeah. So good.
This is a junction in the Word podcast. It separates that bit from this next bit.
So it's been the bank holiday weekend, which I've devoted to alphabetizing my CDs, Mark, and my DVDs, actually. I do have. Actually, I find it immensely therapeutic to do that.
It's therapeutic. Also, you discover a lot of stuff you didn't have. You go watch movies that you've forgotten you had,
I did this with DVDs, and I had been trying for quite a while to see if I could get Amadeus, and then I thought I've got Amadeus, so I watched Amadeus.
So what? No, I remember and that when it came out, and that was a big deal, wasn't it?
It won the Oscar. F. Murray Abraham won the Oscar.
Yeah, also kind of. You think now how many films are based on a true story? Because the whole point of that was the whole root of that was the rumor, wasn't it, back in the day, that Salieri had tried to poison Mozart.
Well, Mozart, I think it was, to be fair, it was, who's the dramatist? Is it Peter Schaffer or Anthony Schaffer? I can't remember. Schaffer wrote the original play, Amadeus. He said it was a fantasia based on Mozart and Salieri.
He was
taking wild liberties with whatever is historical fact. But in order to examine the idea that Salieri was a kind of virtuous individual and was a very big deal in his lifetime, is now forgotten. Whereas Mozart, who comes over as this vulgar libertine.
Yeah, you know, horrible, foul-mouthed git. That's right, yeah.
Is the person who simply can't do anything wrong at all, you know, because he has just unbelievable talent. Which, of course, is an extraordinary idea that is still worthy of debating, you know, particularly in terms of rock stars, you know, people still feel uncomfortable saying they like the music of people that they have reason to believe were not quite as virtuous as they might have been.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Mozart was the case of this many years ago. It's a good film. It's slightly over long, I thought, actually. It's kind of 2.5 hours. They could probably clip off half an hour or whatever. But, they're very good, and F. Murray Abraham of Salieri is fantastic.
He's fantastic.
And
he hires a maid at one point to spy on Mozart, doesn't he?
He's writing the
Marriage of Figaro. It's a great plot. It's really funny.
Well, he goes into his apartment when he's not there to see where he writes this music because he wants to see where it comes from.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
From. But the other thing I've been doing is I've been reading in the garden, I've been reading the letters of P.G. Woodhouse.
Oh, nice.
Which is just fantastic. Highly recommended. And anyway, here's the thing. Those two things, Amadeus and P.G. Woodhouse, come together. Two, you know, let's, you know, make no bones about it, two geniuses in their very different fields. Two absolutely extraordinary talents. In both cases, there is no historical evidence to suggest that they ever did anything except for money. Mozart did not write a note except for money. P.G. Woodhouse did not write a word except for money.
Fair enough.
That's not to say they were money grabbing. You know what I mean?
But it was
to
say they were hard-nosed pros.
They were professionals.
Also, they didn't think of it as some kind of, some kind of art, some kind of, it was a hobby. You know, I might just be able to pen some prose this afternoon. That was what he did for a living. He got up and in his own words, he applied the seat of the pants to the surface of the chair.
Absolutely. Nobody can remember P.G. Woodhouse ever saying anything funny at all. He just wrote it all.
That's right. That's right. Apparently, he
typed
wasn't very
all
funny.
The time.
Yes. People go out to cocktail bars, expect to just be falling about. But no, he obviously worked really hard. Didn't he say that he each sentence he rewrote 10 times or something?
He wrote 10 times.
He really worked at it, you know. The drowsy stillness of the afternoon was shattered by what sounded to his strained senses like G.K. Chesterton falling on a sheet of tin. Isn't that a great line, isn't it? That's from Mr. Mullen speaking. I know.
Doesn't he have another line about this? Sounded like a troop of cavalry going over a tin bridge. I think he does.
Fantastic.
His similes are absolutely extraordinary.
Oh, they're brilliant.
Evelyn Waugh was a huge fan of Woodhouse and said that, you know, take away absolutely everything. You know, even if you're not charmed by the books or whatever.
Yeah.
No other author can give you 10 great similes per page.
Oh, incredible.
That's because Woodhouse said. He sat down and he extracted all of those things from his brain.
Yeah. A melancholy-looking man who had the appearance of one who has searched for the leak in life's gas pipe with a lighted candle.
So there you go. P.G. Woodhouse and Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, two peas in a pod.
The Word Podcast. Fix yourself a drink and it's like being in the pub.
And this section of the podcast extends to another birthday special for Stephen Lamb. Stephen, how very nice to see you. And you have a couple of queries that you're going
to present us with.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you very much.
What's on your agenda?
Well, on my agenda, well, I've got a couple of queries. It being, as we're recording on Easter Monday, I thought I'd just say three words and see what they see what they mean to you. I know you've mentioned Tim Rice a little bit in the past, but what does Jesus Christ Superstar mean to you? There is a reason why I ask.
It means something to me in that I can remember I was hitchhiking around Europe in 1972, 73 it was, and I met a Canadian guy who came back and stayed, and his one thing he wanted to do was to go to Swinging London and see Jesus Christ Superstar, which we did, slightly against my will, actually, because I wasn't really, that wasn't my kind of bag. I always thought like a rock musicals was a kind of parallel universe. It wasn't kind of real.
Yeah.
But we went, and I think it was the Palace Theatre, and I think it was Paul Nicholas, and I think it was Dana Gillespie as Maid Marian. Would I be right? You're obviously next.
Maid Marian, Mary Magdalene.
Mary Magdalene, what am I talking about?
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right about that.
That would be good.
I'm currently researching a book about Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, right.
Wow.
The interesting thing about it from a sort of rock point of view is that the aura around it is completely different in the UK and in the USA. In the UK, the original album, I've actually got it. This is the reissue of the year. That's right. A horrible cover, isn't it? That was the British cover. And in the UK, it was ignored pretty much, and only became a bit of a hit in 72 when the stage show started.
Yeah.
In the USA, it's completely different. It's considered to be a kind of rock classic. It was number one for...
It was.
In the USA. Sold 8 million copies. Number one in the USA for weeks.
About it, really.
So I always found that fascinating. I can't think of any other albums that...
No, there aren't. It's completely unique in that respect. The other thing that fascinated, the only bit of trivia that I picked up about, which you'll no doubt be aware of, about Jesus Christ Superstar, which I got from Tim Rice's fantastic book. Tim Rice's first volume of his autobiography is very good. I think he said that they got it done at Olympic Studios down in Barnes. And they got the likes of members of the Grease band, didn't they, to play it on it? They were the band. And they said, what do you want, session fee or points? And they said, we'll have the session fee. Which is possibly the worst decision anybody ever made in the history of the music business. If they'd had 0.25% of that, they would have been, made in the shade for the rest of their lives.
That's true.
But they didn't. The
same thing applied to Yvonne Elliman. They found in Andrew Lloyd Webber found in a club. They were looking for their Mary Magdalene, and they found Yvonne Elliman in the club, and her manager, quite hard-nosed man, just said, she'll do it, but she wants £200. Said, well, we can give her points. No, she wants £200.
100 of which was going straight into his pocket.
Yeah. So they did £200. And if she had demanded points, she would be much richer than she is.
Absolutely.
I think in the end they gave some of these people points retrospectively, actually.
Well, I think this is not uncommon, because this happened also with, what's the name of the woman who sings on Dark Side of the Moon, who sings on the Great Gig in
the Sky?
Claire Turing.
Yes, she was eventually
a session singer, and she got double session fee because it was Sunday. So, it's 30 quid rather than 15 or whatever. And it was only... And, of course, the interesting thing is they go in and do sessions and it's just a bit of work. It's just a day. They've no reason to think anything's going to happen to it at all. It's probably going to end up on the cutting room floor or whatever. It was only when she was in a record shop at the King's Road a year later that she heard this thing over the PA and thought, crikey, that's me.
But also she recorded that as an experiment, wasn't it? I mean, they were in a and then they thought, let's use the whole thing. They weren't intended to use all of it.
I think they were, actually, because at first when she sang it, they said, just sing anything. This is so Pink Floyd. Sing anything. And so she sang anything, and she couldn't resist the word baby. And they had to say, no, sorry, we don't use the word
sing anything
baby.
But baby.
Yeah. Anything but baby. It's Pink Floyd. Anyway, she later on, in the last 20 years, got a co-composition credit on it. So, she obviously participates in the
other one. The other great one was Herbie Flowers, wasn't it, with Walk on the Wild Side. Quite rightly. Those signatures that make the
Yes.
Song.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So what's your other query? Come on.
Well, the other one is going back to whistle test, really. So yeah. I kind of think we've been spoilt over the years by the various those compilations that the DVDs that was it Jill Sinclair put those together, wasn't it?
Jill Sinclair,
yes, it was.
And also the various compilations that we see on BBC4 and places like that. But it occurred to me that there must have been, but I'm certain they are because there's one band, a particular band I want to mention. There must have been bands that got booked onto the whistle test in your time, but also before and after, that did their whistle test session and then went nowhere.
Oh, absolutely.
Disappeared. Kissing the Pink.
Mark and I can always...
Who can remember all those? God, Annabelle Lamb.
Annabelle Lamb.
No, there were certain people that you had to kind of introduce with a huge amount of oomph and they're going somewhere and you've never heard of them and would never hear of them again, actually.
Yeah, but I've heard of both those.
Oh, have you? Well, that's very unusual.
Yeah, so they I mean, Kissing the Pink, didn't they? They had a hit single or...
They might have had a...
And then they disappeared. It's the ones that completely disappeared without trace.
God.
We've never, ever heard of this.
Can you name some?
There's one particular band in mind. And this is from before your time. This would have been late 76 or early 77, I guess. There was a band called... I've got one of their albums here because I remain a big fan.
Oh.
They were a band called Lake. Nothing to do with Greg Lake. Just like you, I bet you've never heard of them.
I have not.
No.
Right, I'm going to ask you what record company it was.
They were signed to CBS Germany. So they were a German.
this will be the explanation.
Yeah, they were. So they were. They sonically, they sound a bit like, imagine Steely Dan without the jazz. They're sort of pop rock songs. Transatlantic sound. So they were a German band signed to CBS Germany, but they had a Scottish singer. So really good songs, catchy songs, but with terrible, terrible lyrics. But so CBS Germany must have realized that there was some transatlantic potential. So they had a little tiny bit of success in America. Like they had a couple of singles, got to number 80 or something like that.
Right.
I remember them being on the whistle test probably around about early 1977.
Which sounds like the worst possible
They would have been trying to get The Clash or something. I don't know who was going to be on CBS. Yeah.
Well,
that would have been the deal. Or saying,
that's how those things work. Whenever, it was always the same, that kind of branches of the record, when you had a multinational label like CBS and they have a German bit and French bit and whatever, all those territories were allowed one priority act where they could get favors out of all the other legs of the company. So they get them on the BBC program in exchange for which they would get the Roaring Boys on Beat Club in Germany or whatever.
Exactly.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
That's how it would work. They would never come back. It would never happen again. You know what I mean? But there'd be one campaign. Do you remember the campaign? Do you remember the Sadistic Mika band, Mark? Do you remember them?
I don't.
Japanese group.
No.
Signed to EMI, I think I'm right in saying. And there was obviously, certainly in those days, you could launch a group on the basis that they represented a nationality who weren't normally represented in popular music.
Yeah.
So a band from Japan was a bit of a story.
Bit of an old.
So they got the treatment. They got the treatment for one album and then never again. You know, you just get one shot.
Yeah, we've done Japanese rock. We've moved on.
Yeah, absolutely. So Lake, I think you should be congratulated on that because I have never heard of them. Well, I have heard of them now, absolutely. Take anything off the top shelf. Take a cuddly toy or a goldfish.
A coconut, a goldfish in a plastic bag.
That wasn't the purpose. But nonetheless, thank you very much.
Absolutely. Well, look. Thanks very much for joining us and for being one of our supporters. And we're a bit late for your birthday, but you had a good had a good birthday, and you've got over whatever shock was involved over the significance of the birthday, over which we will draw a veil.
Yes, bye bye. Thank you very much. Thank you very much indeed.
See you.
You're listening to the Word Podcast, where the time is whenever you want it to be.
And here we are, any other business. And we're joined again back in person by Alex Gold, who's home is the sailor, home from the sea.
Hello.
How are you doing, Alex?
I'm absolutely battered. I haven't slept since yesterday and it's now tomorrow. So I'm a little bit out of sorts, but very much
and
a first
to remind problem. People, you've been on a cruise ship playing yep. John Lennon in a band for 3 months. So literally cabin fever. I mean, you've been off the ship, about once a week to go and get a bit of, technology mended and then straight back on again. Not being anywhere else.
You know, we could 3-4 times a week we can get off when we dock in port and we just go to a coffee shop to get our Wi-Fi fixed. That's what we do. There's generally not enough time to go any further unless we want to do like a proper excursion.
But
3 months on and then an 18-hour journey home, which I'm just off the back of today. So it's quite nice, though. It's nice to be
so
back.
You're sailing on one of these extraordinary modern luxury liners.
Yes.
Do you have a sea legs problem when you come back on shore? Or does that not occur?
No, I mean, they're so massive and the stabilizers are so huge. You don't really feel it move except when you hear... You get a big thunk occasionally, which I think is when you hit a whale, which is a thing, sadly. But you really don't feel these things.
So they don't roll those big boats, then. So you don't get seasick. Does anybody get seasick?
Not at all. They're designed for ultimate comfort. So you know the stabilizers just keep that thing. Like it cuts through the ocean like a butter knife. Yeah. It's astonishing. Right. It really, really is. So, no problems there. It's just, the flight going, west to east back again. We had two flights. I think that's been the killer. But
you can get a good night's sleep tonight.
Oh, yeah.
So,
going to put myself down early evening.
You put yourself down.
We saw you earlier today, and you've since then, you've had a Chaz and Dave, and you've had a David Gower, and you look very spruced up. So, hurrah.
Thanks. Yeah.
Okay, chaps, what have we got to talk about in any other business?
We've got Nick Durden, haven't we? He's written this wonderful book about pop stars not on the slide, but after the glory days.
The afterlife
really
of pop
good.
Stars,
the afterlife
isn't
of
it?
Pop stars. It's really good.
Yeah. And we talked to Mick Wall about all kinds of things.
Yeah, he's really
and, good. What else we got coming up? We've got, as we've previously announced, we got another Word in the Park taking place on June the 18th of this year in Holland Park, where we will be celebrating the 80th birthday of somebody called Paul McCartney. How should people find out about tickets, Alex?
Right. Well, there are a couple of ways you can do this. First of all, there will be a link in the show notes. And there is also a full-on whole widget on the Word New Year website, which is wiyelondon.com.
Okay. And very if good. You haven't already done so, if you're watching this on YouTube, which you could be, couldn't you? Just see that bit below where it says subscribe, below the window. Just press it now while we wait. Okay, we're just
You know you want to. We've got all day. We've got all day, haven't we?
Oh, they're pressing it.
Oh, I can see. Oh, yes, they are. Oh, Lord.
That was a good press, actually.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Well, welcome
That's good.
Aboard.
Thank you very much. And if you'd like to be even more involved in this Hell Enterprise, the way to do it is being a Patreon supporter. And the way to find out about that is just go to patreon.com/wordinyourear and look at the many exciting and rewarding ways in which you could be involved. Cheers.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.